Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kawula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Kawula. We're here for another Zoom episode of Wake Up Hollywood. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have singer-songwriter Patrick Baker, a.k.a. The Dark Sea. How are you, Patrick?
I'm great. How are you doing?
So tell me real quick. I'm good. Just trying to get through this coronavirus pandemic and staying focused on one day at a time, man.
Nice. Shelter in place.
Yeah, man. So tell me real quick, first the name for your artist name. How did you come up with The Dark Sea?
So I struggled with that for probably the last year, trying to figure that out. At one point, I was going to go with my producer name, which is P Butter, but it just was like a little too goofy, I felt like, for the style of music I was doing. And it's going to sound a little weird. I actually went to my first name, which is actually Douglas. And like the literal meaning is The Dark Sea.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. So it's got some like historical significance for my family too. It's both my father and my grandfather are also named Douglas. So it's like a little bit of like an homage to them as well. And I felt like it fit the vibe of what I'm doing, the project and all that stuff.
That's awesome. I love when artists like they go through levels to figure out how they're going to like put their music out there and what the moniker is going to be or what the billing is going to be, or, you know, because it's like everything has a story, and the more of a story, then it just has more to it. You know what I mean? It's like you want a story even in the name. It's just part of it, you know?
Absolutely. And it's funny, like Patrick, like the meaning of that is like noble or great. When I was like, that's just a little pretentious. So
you're like, well, maybe I'll wait that for the next record. So tell me about your sound. Like, how did you come up with kind of the aspects of what you wanted to put out into the universe musically?
I throw a lot of stuff at the wall to see kind of what I like. Similar to you, I listen to a lot of stuff. I mean, I listen to pop 40, but I'll also listen to blues and reggae and jazz. And I'm very eclectic. The majority of what I listen to is some form of rock or like kind of urban hip hop stuff, but I like to dabble in stuff. And so for me, that's kind of important to like have other elements. I feel like a lot of music that's not, at least from my perspective, that I don't find as interesting is the stuff that just stays very genre specific. It doesn't really incorporate anything else because it just gets stale after a while.
Right. I find myself being mystified by some of these older guitar legend records, the Jimi Hendrix, the Steve Ray Vaughns of the world, where it's like they become timeless. Even like, you know, I was just listening to Jimi Hendrix right before this interview, and I was like, man, he was doing things that were so simple, but yet so complex that we're still learning from. And he did it, you know, at such a young age, between like 24, 25, 26. It's just like, it's so nuts, you know, because like I'm 41 and I'm still learning Hendrix tunes and thinking, how did he come up with this? How did he write this? It just blows my mind, you know?
It's incredible. Like one of the things I just think about is like what those guys did. I mean, similar to Jimmy Page, I mean, that guy was on tour with Little Richard. I mean, he got fired for being too much of a showman. And it's like, it's just funny to think about, like, it's like, you know, you're doing too much. Get out of here.
You know, my engineer, he he like had run-ins with Jimi Hendrix and like positive, you know, not anything confrontation or anything. But he was, you know, he's an old timer. I always tease him about it. And it's like the stories that he has, just like running into Chuck Berry, playing with Freddie King, running into Jimi Hendrix. It's like there was a definite vibe with musicians from that era where everybody was like way into the blues, way into rock and roll, way into good arrangements. And, you know, some of that is missing in today's music. So I love that you're, you know, you're like a young millennial into some of the older stuff. How did you get into some of that older stuff? You said in your bio, your parents' record collection, but what specific records or what specific sounds like drew you to some of those?
So like quick backstory, my parents ran a independent newspaper in Dallas during the 60s.
Awesome.
And so my dad would fly out, they'd fly him out, you know, in payola and all that stuff. They like fly him out to basically give like positive reviews and that kind of thing. And they give him free records. And so like, and my dad wasn't like super into music, but like he was more into like the social movement stuff. But like that had an impact on me. And he, as I got into music, like around 11 or 12, I started going through and seeing all these records and like, what's this? What's that? And just kind of, that kind of got me interested in stuff like the Beatles. There were a couple of blues records, stuff like that, where you just, you put it on and you're like, it's timeless. I mean, as a 12-year-old in the 90s, it was still an amazing thing to listen to.
But that, what's crazy is like most records that are put out today, they may not last 30 years. And here you are in the 90s listening to the Beatles. And I kind of was the same way. I kind of like, I stopped playing piano, and it was actually the Beatles that got me back into playing piano because I started hearing all these great rock anthems like Hey Jude and Let It Be. And, you know, it had life in the 90s. So, like, it's so refreshing for me to hear another generation of an artist getting that same feeling from some of those old records.
Yeah, there's just, I mean, I hear a lot of that stuff still, even in modern stuff. I just feel like it's so much more about the like rhythm and percussion now and less about the melodic. Cause like, what's the 4-chord progression? Cool. That's it for the whole song.
Right.
Where like, I'm actually taking a class on the Beatles right now. So I'm always trying to get better, but it's interesting. Like just all the different substitutions of stuff that they'll do. And like, one of the songs I'll play later today is got like probably like 4 or 5 versions of E in it. It's just kind of funny, but
well, know. I mean, that's what I love about it. They were so experimental, and I love that you're writing songs and thinking about that stuff, because it's like when you're kind of exposed to what those artists were doing, you start incorporating some of that, some of those sounds and techniques into how you make your own records. Let's talk a little bit about you as an artist. So you started playing guitar. When did you start playing guitar?
I was like 11 or 12. And I'm 39 now, so like.
And did you start? Did you start like with acoustic guitar? Did you start with electric? Like, how did you? What made you kind of like just go all the way with it?
I wanted an electric, and my mom was a smart woman. She told me you got to learn how to play acoustic first. And so, I thought I knew better. So my thing was, I went to the local. It wasn't even a guitar shop. It was a record store that had like probably like the guitars that nobody ever played at the guitar stores. They just gave them to the record store. And so I think I bought one for like $25, like literally like $20-$25 for an acoustic. I was like, hey mom, my birthday is coming up. Can you get me an electric now? And like, I didn't touch an acoustic for 5 years. I wish I had. Now I play a lot of acoustic stuff, but back then it was all about electric guitar. And that was my big thing that I was into. And I mean, I hung out with some people, kind of got in a lot of trouble and stuff. And honestly, that was like my saving grace for not going down the wrong path, because it got real heavy for a little while. And the thing that I would kind of disappear for a little bit and then kind of come back. And then like my big thing was like at a certain point, I was just like, man, I just got to focus on music and school. And I don't need to bother with all this other stuff.
I very much share that same parallel. Like I could have been a very different and darker person in a lot of ways if I didn't have music, because music tends to be like a therapeutic thing, a healing thing. And it helps me focus some of that energy into putting it into creating something instead of wanting to destroy something else. You know, it's like now I think about music as being that channel for creators to make some kind of, you know, maybe it's a political statement, maybe it's an artistic statement, to take something that may be dark for anyone that's going through it and turn it into a beautiful light, you know? So yeah. I love that you have that same parallel, because I feel like a lot of musicians, you know, that's what is a guiding force in their life. It's like it does keep them out of trouble. So
right.
Tell me what songs or rock bands at the time you were trying to emulate just by learning their songs as an influence.
It's like the three that had the biggest impact on me were the three biggest bands at the time: Metallica, Guns N' Roses, Nirvana. I mean, it was started with Nirvana. Yeah, and it started with Nirvana. And I think part of that was like I just could connect and relate with Kurt, even though like a lot of his lyrics could be sometimes nonsensical. I just like the emotion, the raw emotion. And the songwriting was incredible. And so I really connected with that. And as I got a little more into guitar, you know, bands like Guns N' Roses and Metallica from a technical perspective were just at a kind of the next level. And I got into some stuff that was a little bit more intense in terms of the technical stuff, but I've kind of gone full circle. And now I'm really more into great songs. If it's going to be a solo, it's got to be a great solo. Otherwise, don't bother. Like that's a little bit different, but where like I would say my focus my first 8-9 years as a guitar player was just all about soloing, and it just, you know,
you're like that only takes it so far. It's like every part of a song, whether it's the guitar solo or the vocal, it's telling a story, but if one is like way lopsided and it's out of balance with the whole thing, it just doesn't go very far. It doesn't work. So I love that you're thinking about all the other aspects now too, because it always will come back to, you know, put you, you know, tap you on your shoulder like, wait a minute, this needs more for the balance to work, you know?
Right.
But I was super into Nirvana, and I worked at Guitar Center about almost 20 years ago, and Dave Grohl walked in. I sold him a guitar. I sold him a Taylor acoustic guitar. But the whole time I was looking at him, I was like, it was so cool and super down to earth. And the whole time I was just like, dude, you're the lead singer of the Foo Fighters. And more importantly for me, the drummer for Nirvana, which is what shaped a lot of my musical tastes, you know, through high school and, you know, even into college. So I was like super starstruck with Nirvana big time. So great bands. Metallica, I ended up playing Bonnaroo with them in 2008. And that was like a full circle for me because I loved Enter Sandman and that Black record and Justice for all those early records of theirs. They still are just such dynamic records. So tell me how that influenced your songwriting or you wanting to write or produce or to make music.
So I just started writing songs. Like that was, nobody told me that was a thing. I just decided I got a guitar and I just started kind of playing with it and writing stuff. A lot of it was terrible. My first song I ever wrote is actually pretty decent. I was actually played it the other day. I was like, wow, there's like a lot of crazy stuff going on for like a 13-year-old to figure this stuff out. I was like double picking, like double finger picking stuff. And I'm like, what? I don't even know what I was thinking, but like, so for me, like the big thing that influenced songwriting was like kind of the mood or the vibe. I think for all three of those bands, and even like I was really influenced by a lot of the bands from the 60s as well, like the Doors. I mean, there was a point where I think that was almost the only band I listened to for like six or eight months. Like I just got really into them. Same with the Beatles, the Stones, as you can see. I mean, they're my top five all-time bands, period. I think that they're amazing.
That's crazy. Well, let's have you play a song. What are you going to play us first?
So I'll play, this is a single that I released a couple weeks ago, and it's called My Brother's Keeper. And we kind of touched on it a little bit, but this is, I mean, in a way, this is kind of a song to those friends that I lost literally, or, you know, maybe lost touch with, who just like they continued on a path that they probably shouldn't have.
So. Okay, let's hear it.
Don't need two picks.
We left the desert sand remains, vacant stare, not the same. An empty shell used to be.
Nice, my friends. Solid job. So tell me about this. When you're writing a song, like, are you thinking about a story that's something that you've gone through? Are you putting yourself like in another person's shoes? Tell me how you write.
So what I found is the most successful for me, like my process, and I've only figured this out in the last, probably the last 6 months, is I usually start guitar first. So, like, the other song I'll play for you guys a little later is literally been working on it for a couple years. Had no idea what it was about. And it just, it kind of chisels away. Like, I think Michelangelo had a quote about, like, seeing the angel. And I don't have that. Like, for me, it's like, it kind of reveals itself. And the vibe and what the song's about generally changes. Like, originally, that song I just wrote was, it was more from the perspective of like a veteran coming back from war, which is like why it starts with left the desert. But it's just, it got me thinking about like, I don't know that many people who've gone to war. And so it was like, it's like, I wanted it more personal. And so then I had to kind of be like, am I going to go there and be like honest and vulnerable about who I am and what I've been through? Or am I going to try to play it cool and safe? And I decided to be a little more vulnerable.
That's always the direction you want to go as a writer. That's what I love. I love when there's a kind of like a delicate subject matter, I find is what kind of like stops any listener in its tracks. It's like, whatever this is about, time stands still right now when I listen to it. Right.
Right.
You know, there's not a lot of songs like that, you know, that I hear on the radio of like new releases where they do that. But every now and then you'll hear some writer that talks about like subject matter that's like maybe not so it's not so easy to kind of comprehend or take in or process. And those are the songs that make me think, you know, so much. What I love about somebody like Paul McCartney, he wrote Blackbird, and it was about, you know, this anti-racism song that, you know, many people don't know that that's the layer that he was kind of going after. So it's nice when people, songwriters, are writing stories about things that are kind of like not so easy to comprehend or process for the average listener, because it kind of helps point them in a direction of whatever their views maybe aren't you know, maybe their mind is not made up, and maybe that artist can like point a direction of, you know, into something that's a little bit more positive. So I love that you take that approach. By the way, our rooms look very similar. We have guitar amps. What guitar amps do you have? I see a Marshall head. I think I see an Orange amp.
Yep. I have a Marshall. It's like a vintage modern, which is like, I don't know if you remember those. They came out like probably 2006 or something like that.
Yep. Yep.
Kind of plexi, kind of somewhere between like a plexi and an 800. And then I got Rockerverb 3.
What was that? Say it again.
Rockerverb 3.
Oh, like, I don't know that.
So that's the Orange. It's kind of their like high gain model. It's like, I originally got it actually for the clean channel, but you know, it sounds pretty good for
that. That's the Orange cabinet.
Well, that Orange head, the cabinet just has like vintage 30s in it.
Okay. Yeah. And then what's under the Orange head?
That's a 6505. It's like kind of like a 5150. It's like the later version of it.
And is that all? Are those all the guitar amps you have?
I have like a little Epiphone 5-watt in the other room, which my wife loves for decor. So that doesn't.
That's awesome. You're like, I can't plug this in anytime, so I'll have my music room for that stuff.
I mean, occasionally if I have like a guest over or whatever, like we'll jam out in there, but generally it kind of sits there and collects dust.
Yeah, it's like I have there's a Fender Twin, I'm pointing to it right here, and then I have a rehearsal space with my Vox AC30, and I actually just got a something called a Kemper amp profile. Have you heard of that?
I have.
Man, that thing is awesome. It is one of the coolest pieces of gear that I own. And it's for an amp enthusiast, you may not love it as much because it kind of takes a lot of sounds and profiles of amp sounds. But you could put it through an amp and it's like having a head that you can kind of tap into any sound you want. And it has that vibe. It's kind of crazy. It's like one of the best things I own.
That's something that – so I actually got started – recording from a Line 6 interface. It was called Guitar Port. That was my first venture into recording. It was like super primitive. I think you could only record, like, it would allow you to like set bars. So you could say like, I'm going to record this 4 bars, but you couldn't stop anywhere in between. You just had to record 4 bars. And my first band, that was how we made our demos, was I just went in there and like would record 4 bars at a time.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
So you would just do 4 bars and then stop and then add another 4 bars, keep going like that?
Yeah, and just kind of like loop it out. It was kind of an interesting process, but at the time, and for what it was, the sounds weren't bad. You know, I listened to it a little while ago and I was like, you know, for the tech, how far the technology is. And I've heard some of the stuff like the Kemper stuff and like, it gets real close. I mean, wow. For what you're talking about, like the Kemper stuff, like that's it gets really close. And I mean, it's similar to a lot of the plugins for like audio stuff where it's like it gets real close. Like I have a 1073 mic pre and it's cool and I like having it, but I gotta say the plugin gets really close. Like, you know, if I were in a pinch, I would probably take the plugin and trade that for something else, like a guitar or something, if I needed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I have two modes. I was actually just talking about this with my amp guru. And he, you know, I was telling him, I said, you know, I have two ways of working. It's like, one, when I record at home, I'm usually using plugins. I'm not miking that amp. I never mic that amp when I'm working in the box, you know, on my computer. Because there's so many guitar sounds I can use that are already in the computer, A, and B, the Kemper, any sounds that I want, I get from that thing. But it's funny, when I make a record with the band, I've got all my analog gear, and I kind of use it as a combination. So for this last record, I had my Fender Twin, but then I had like 3 different like pedal arrangement setups, and then I had my Kemper. And I actually found myself going between each setup for various songs or sounds. And I actually loved being able to just go like, oh, this is not the right guitar tone. Let me go to this. 90% of what I was doing was all amp. But I found myself for some things using the Kemper or using pedals to get some of those sounds that I needed and going direct either from the amp or from the Kemper using pedals to get some of the dirt and sound. So like when you're sculpting guitar sounds, what are you kind of going through? Are you miking the amps? Are you using the like Logic amps or Pro Tools? What do you use?
So what I found, what's funny is the Orange amp has a built-in attenuator, and I'm in a fairly small room. It's basically like a spare bedroom. And so that one of the things I didn't really think about, but I was just being like respectful for my neighbors or whatever, is I was recording at low volumes and I didn't have too much problems with like build up and resonance and stuff like that. What I've got bought most recently is by Universal Audio. It's called like an aux box. Have you heard of it?
I have.
And so it basically what it does is it's both an attenuator and a speaker cab emulator. So basically it allows you to plug in, crank up your amp almost as loud as you want it to go. What I've noticed with a couple of the amps, if you turn it all the way up, it's actually too much power, even for the aux box. And like, it's not that it's going to hurt it or anything. It just sounds terrible.
Right.
You have to kind of find that sweet spot. So I bought that a couple months ago, and that's what I've been using. It's just this thing sitting right up here. It has like just a ridiculous plethora of guitar tones. I mean, I feel like it's somewhat similar. It's in that kind of hybrid range of like, I'm still using a tube amp, and like, that's always been like my thing is like, I like analog gear. And there's certain things I feel like that you can do it, that you do a good job with. And there's some things that are, I haven't tried a Kemper, like for like things like palm muting, but my biggest beef with all the plugins for that stuff is I feel like if I'm just doing straight ahead rock soloing, all that stuff, no problem. But if I'm doing anything heavy or aggressive, like I've yet to find something I'm really happy with the way that it feels and sounds when you're chugging. So,
well, you know what sold me on it? So my amp guru who's like, he's the guy who builds, I mean, he just built me a fuzz pedal, and he also, he always fixes my, he's been fixing my amps for 15 years. He said the reason he got is like all the biggest guys, the Van Halens, the, you know, Def Leppards, they're just coming in with a Kemper and plugging it into the house system, and they've got all their patches in there, and they're basically using that to, you know, like the amps are almost like decoration because they're not using it as the, you know, what it's for. So it's kind of crazy to see how technology, I love that you're still like, you like way into tubes, because I'm like that too. I like feeling the heat of an amp running, and, you know, but it's just like, you know, you now like Fender makes noiseless pickups. Paul Reed Smith makes noiseless pickups on guitars. And it's like now when people hear, you know, regular pickups on a guitar, they're like, oh, is there any way to turn that, you know, the pickup noise down? It's like, it's part of the guitar, man. That's like, you hear it on all your favorite records. But once you start, you know, advancing technology, it's like, you don't want to go so back to the, some of the old ways that make it what it's, what's great. You know, it's like, I find myself running into problems with tubes all the time. Just like, you know, having to change the tubes getting too hot, like, you know, whatever it is when it comes to amps, you know, so.
Oh, for sure. There's a sweet spot. I mean, if I were going to be touring around, I would at a minimum consider it as a backup, because if you're on the road, the last thing you want to be thinking about is like, how am I going to get this tube amp fixed in the middle of wherever? Probably aren't going to get it fixed. So that means you're going to have to buy something new, or you're going to have to borrow something. It just.
What do you use for recording? Are you using Pro Tools, Logic? Are you, what do you do?
So I'm so Logic and Pro Tools. I tend to build my sessions out in Logic for like, I'm doing everything right now. Like ideally I'd like to get a drummer at some point, and a bass player and that kind of thing. So I build out like the tracks in Logic, for the editing purposes. I really like Pro Tools for being able to cut vocals and guitar. And then UA, it just came out with a DAW that's interesting. I'm not really totally using it, but I like that it allows you to print a lot of the, like a lot of their plugins on the track. live, which is kind of cool just because running their stuff is just so intensive on the computers that it's kind of like I found in some of the other DAWs, it creates too much of a delay. So from that perspective, I like it. But as of right now, it's mostly just the Logic and Pro Tools.
Well, let's listen to, I think we have Ronan, if you're there, let's play the studio track that I sent you. Let me make sure Ronan is there. Ronan, are you there by chance?
There's a lover in this story, but the story's still the same. There's a lullaby for suffering and a paradox to blame. But it's written in the scriptures and it's not some idle claim. You want it darker, we kill the flame. Lighting up the prisoners and the gods taking aim. I struggle with some demons, they were middle class and tame. I didn't know I had permission to murder and to maim. You want it darker, we kill the flame.
Thank you.
But tell me, you kind of have a Gorillaz influence on you.
Gorillaz? Ready, my lord.
Yeah, I hear a little bit of Damien Albarn and Gorillaz. Do you know Damien Albarn?
I mean, I know like one or two songs of them.
Yeah, it's got that vibe, man. Gorillaz. I saw Damien Albarn live at South by Southwest. This totally got that vibe, man.
Interesting.
Yeah, tell me about the like the story or the kind of like the view of the story on the song.
So I didn't write the song. So the production, it's basically, it's a Leonard Cohen song. It was the last song on, it was the title track for the last album he ever put out.
Oh, the one that right before he died.
Yeah. So he basically, I think, I can't remember if it came out right before he died or right when he died, but it was like right around the same time. And I didn't pay attention to it. I'm going to be a little bit of a music snob, and like, generally, my observation with most 60s and 70s artists is past the early 90s, most of their stuff is terrible. And so I was like, I'm not going to bother with it. And I just happened to listen to it. And as soon as it just hit me, because it was one of those things where everything was going on in our country. It was just, I was feeling a little bit like, what the fuck? And I don't know if I'm allowed to.
It's okay. We swear all the time on the show.
All right. Well, anyways, so there's some lines in there about the guards taking aim. And it just, you know, there's a lot of people aren't aware of some of the stuff that's happening in Palestine, where it's like Israelis are just shooting down Palestinians for protesting, just wanting basic human rights. And they're just shooting down hundreds and hundreds of people, including women and children, amputees, reporters. It's crazy. And so it's partially like a critique on our government, but it's also, it goes on around the world. And it's, I think he was coming from more of a place of like, you know, I'm going to have the last laugh with God type of thing. But for me, it was a little bit of a political statement. It was kind of where I was coming at from it.
And so did you rework all the production? Like, how did you kind of like figure out what parts were going to go where?
Yeah. So his production was actually a bit more modern. His had like the bass line on it. It's like more of like an 808 thing. And I think he had like just kind of electronic drums, and he had some like, he did have some choir stuff. It was pretty bare bones. So like the guitar, there was no guitars in it. The guitars is all new. The kind of hook, if you want to call it that, I made the melody up on that.
So was it like spoken word?
Yeah, it was Cohen. It was like pretty classic Cohen, and it was just amazing lyrics delivered really well. And in terms of like the production stuff, I really felt like I got a chance to really kind of use some influences that like I haven't before, like. I actually use a Rhodes bass in there. So it's just like, for me, it's like a kickback to like the Doors and some of those bands from the 60s. Like that bass line on there is not a true Rhodes, but it's, I've done enough where they were kind of sound, it kind of has that vibe to it. And Rhodes organ in there as well, which again is, you know, back to those like 60s and 70s vibe.
Yeah. I heard some synth bass. So I was wondering what that was, because it almost sounded like a Moog bass.
Yeah, those are cool too. It started off as, and I'm sure you know how this works, it starts off as one sound, and then you start playing with it, and the next thing you know, you're like, oh, and this new toy I have, well, let me see what this sounds like. And so that's kind of what happened.
That's part of the joy of making records and making songs. It's like you get to use new toys. I think that goes with any record that I've done. It's like I'll always add an instrument or a pedal or some sound of some sort that I'm excited about to kind of like show, you know, different sounds or tones on a record. So it's kind of cool when you experiment. What is the piece of gear you cannot live without the most, whether it's a guitar or an amp?
Probably the guitar in my hand.
The acoustic? What do you have in your hand? Is it a Gibson? It looks like a Gibson acoustic.
Yeah, it's a Gibson. It's a J45. It's a cutaway.
Classic. J45, that is the songwriter's guitar, man.
Yeah, it was like, as I told you when we were talking maybe like a year ago, it's like number two on my list. I mean, I would, an HD 28 from Martin would be like my dream guitar, but I just don't know if I'm willing to part $4,000 for it. You know, it's just one of those.
I actually like the HD 28. I also love the HD 35.
I don't know if I've tried that, but that, you know.
Great guitars. They don't make a lot of them there because they sell more D28s and HD28s.
Right.
But that guitar is, it's usually a three piece back, and it's just it's a badass instrument, you know? And then, you know, and then I also like try to counter it with I like the Clapton Martin. I think it's a cool guitar. I've never fallen in love with it to the point of wanting to buy it because I don't always love like the super small guitars. Like it's a very thin model. I have a Martin JC1E that I love. That's my touring guitar. It's played my first show to play my last show. And then I have a Goodall acoustic that was made for me by James Goodall and his son. And it's the most incredible acoustic guitar that I own. But, you know, I always fall in love with guitars. I don't have a Taylor, and I love Taylor guitars. I want to get that walnut 12 string that they have. There's a couple Gibson guitars that are old acoustic guitars. My friend has a J45 from like 62, and it sounds incredible. And I'm always like, yo, you ever want to part with this? I'll buy it, man. So I love that you're so into guitars. What about electrics? What's your guitar of choice for electrics?
So I used to be more attached to guitars. I just kind of have been... I still have the first electric I ever got, and it's like been painted green and a bunch of crazy stuff. Right now, like I have this guy, which is kind of fun. It's a little
Jazzmaster.
So they call it an offset Tele. And so I kind of changed it up a little bit. I put in a new bridge on it. And then I changed the pickups out on it. It's a weird guitar because
it looks like a Jazzmaster and a Tele combined.
Yeah, so it's a Jazzmaster body with a Tele neck.
Crazy.
And it's got like a pretty, it's pretty beefy. Like that, the neck on it feels like a baseball bat. It's mahogany, so it's heavy. I originally bought it because I wanted something mahogany, kind of like a Les Paul, but I was like, I just don't want the weight. And I ordered this from Fender, and it's like heavier than most Les Pauls I've ever played. So it's kind of one of those.
Like, that's a guitar that you don't want to tour with all the time.
Yeah, I will probably problems right there. Tour with this. So now I'm leaning towards eventually probably getting either a Les Paul or an SG. I always have issues with bending the necks on SGs. Like from a weight perspective, I like the SGs, but the intonation, I just feel like I'd probably manhandle it too much.
I have a pretty cool story. I have a Les Paul Studio. It's the first electric guitar I ever bought. And I happened to be studying music in Virginia, and I got an opportunity to go to New York for 4 or 5 days. And my dad actually met me in New York from L.A. And I open up the paper, and it says Les Paul playing tonight at the Iridium. So I told my dad, I'm like, we got to go to this. So we went and bought tickets for the second show. He did two shows that night. And I was like, I'm going to bring my Les Paul. I'm going to bring my guitar. And so I stood in line in between the two shows. And then he was about to start, and he looked down the line, and he's like, the kid with the guitar will be the last one I sign tonight. And there were like 4 or 5 people behind me like, oh, man. And I was just like, oh, my God. So he actually signed my Les Paul. He wrote to Nikki, keep picking Les Paul.
That's incredible.
Isn't that incredible, dude? So it's like one of my prized possessions because – like, I'll never go on the road with it. I tour with it seldomly, and it's made its debut on records. Maybe, like, once or twice it's been on a record. Right. It's just, like, one of those guitars. Like, I know, I always recorded it at home, but I just don't take it out for that reason because it's, like, it's just, it's now priceless to me. You know, it's, like, you know.
I mean...
Isn't that crazy? So anyways, I love a Les Paul. It's always like one of my favorite things in the world. Let's have you play another track for us before we sign off. What are you going to play for us next?
So this is actually one of the songs I'm working on for my next release. And it's a song called Ghosted. And it could be like the what most people these days would call ghosted, you know, like losing to like somebody just disappearing out of your life. But this particular song has like a little bit deeper meaning. And so it's coming from the perspective of like, when you lose somebody, you don't just lose that person, but you actually lose that entire relationship. And so it was written actually for my father about my mom passing. And so it's a song coming from a perspective of like, how do you deal with that loss? And so that's what the song's about.
All right, let's hear it. Tell Smashing Pumpkins was an influence on that song
for sure.
You know, it's funny, I actually just downloaded the singles soundtrack from that movie Cameron Crowe did maybe 2 years ago, and I was listening to Smashing Pumpkins, Jimi Hendrix, Pearl Jam, and I was like, oh, I bet Patrick has this record or knows this movie.
Oh, for sure.
Awesome job. Where can people find your music if they want to download or learn more about what you're doing?
Yes, yeah, so most of what I have going on is the Dark Sea Music
Spell it out because people are dumb.
thedarkseamusic.com. It's my website. You can reach me there. Same with social media, like Facebook, Instagram, or on SoundCloud. Those are kind of the main ones that I'm doing.
So. Well, awesome, Patrick. I'm very excited to hear new music from you, man.
Yeah, appreciate it. And I'll be putting some new that song along with a couple of others that are kind of in a similar vibe out in the next month or so. So
awesome. We'll keep chugging away, man. We'll have to reconnect and maybe follow up with an interview in 10 months and see what else is going on with your music and all that's going on with you.
Awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Dude, awesome. Have a good night, man. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay inspired.
Thanks so much.
Rocking, man. I'll talk to you soon, bro.
We'll be right back.